Kia ora, Peter.
Kia ora.
How's it going?
Very good, very good.
So today we are going to be talking about the religious dimensions to the recent Roe versus Wade cancellation, which I'm sure everyone is pretty well versed on by now.
Yes, they should be, but it's been a very dramatic decision, and it's got significant religious implications, I think.
Yes, I mean, this whole sort of pro-abortion stance in general, a lot of the time, does seem to be heavily rooted in Christianity. Is that fair?
Yes, of course. We need to understand that the original decision and the cancellation, neither of them mention religious grounds. You know, they're very specifically on the one case, the Constitution in 1973 was deduced as giving the right of women to make a free choice of what they did with their body, and that the fetus was not regarded as a life deserving of being protected while it was yet unborn. Now, the grounds of the cancellation, again, is not religious. It's using the new justices seem to be operating, and the judgment seems to operate on the basis of what's called originalist theory, which is to say you try to deduce what the writers of the Constitution would have meant. And the deduction is made that they wouldn't have meant that there was a right to abort a fetus. And therefore, it's an illegitimate extension of the Constitution. So that's totally different from all the issues that rage around it, although we may suspect that the judges come from religious position. Certainly they were chosen very carefully by Trump as conservatives. But the religious dimensions are what's now unfolding in front of us. Very, very dramatic increase in religious tension in the states over this decision.
Yes, because the religious dimensions, while it might not be super tightly associated with the judgment that was passed, does seem to be a pretty significant part of the pro-life movement, of the sort of anti-abortion movement within the community in America.
Yes, and what is interesting is that it has shifted and changed from what it was back in 1973. Back in 1973, the pro-life cause, as it began to be termed, or the anti-abortion cause, was very strongly a Catholic campaign. There were only a small number of Protestants connected with it. The religious right today is almost always conceived of as ultra-Protestant, mostly evangelical and fundamentalist Protestants. And we tend to forget that actually there are still Catholic voices involved in it. And this is partly because the two most prominent Catholics in the land, Joe Biden and Nancy Pelosi, have come out vigorously as in favour of abortion. So the old way in which the ranks were divided has shifted quite a lot.
Right, and there is an argument that I have sort of seen coming up more and more, which I would like to ask you about, which is the whole when does life begin? Because I think for people who are pro-choice, there is just a general sense that life begins at birth. And then for people in the anti-abortion pro-life movement, there seems to be a tendency towards life begins at the date of conception, which is, I mean, is almost a weird concept because no one even really knows when their date of conception exactly was. So is there sort of a religious angle to that as well?
Yes, there is. I was asked earlier today by a friend of mine, so is there something in the Bible that bans abortion? And there are no specific verses that do this at all. It's interesting. You might have expected that there would be something, but perhaps in the ancient world, people so zealously guarded birth that they couldn't imagine attempts to abort a fetus. I don't know, because certainly abortion was very common, has been very common in the medieval and modern world, and it was banned. But the nearest you can get is say there's a verse in the book of Psalms in the Old Testament that says, even before I was conceived, you shaped me in my mother's womb. And this verse is the one that most supporters of the pro-life group hold on to as making it very clear that life begins with conception, not with birth. And so, I mean, it's kind of on somewhat marginal verses like that that you have to build your principles if you're going to come up with a pro-life cause. And maybe this was why originally the religious right was not very strongly anti-abortion. But I think what happened was that Roe versus Wade in 1973 really staked out the culture wars that rolled out in the US in the 1970s, led to the formation of the so-called moral majority. And so abortion became a religious subject, and indeed a very absolutist position on abortion was seen as a religious position, whereas generally to that stage, it was really only the Catholic Church that ever maintained that you had to pit the mother's life against the baby's life. In almost all Protestant cases, the mother's life was to be preserved, and if the baby was lost, then that was sad, but not morally wrong. So it's around these issues of the moral complexities in the protection of the baby. Incidentally, that was an issue in the New Zealand abortion law for many years, that doctors had to certify that either the mother's life or well-being, including mental well-being, were at stake if the abortion went ahead. If the birth went ahead.
Right, and there is sort of still an element of that, because I think we often forget how recent it was here that abortion became decriminalised.
Yes, indeed, just a year and a half ago. Yeah.
Exactly, which really isn't that long ago at all. I think sort of another thing that I did want to touch on that people do seem to struggle with the sort of connection with the religious community and the pro-life movement, is that there just seems to be a lot of care and consideration for an unborn fetus, perhaps more so than born children who are in positions of suffering in the world. Do you think that sort of contradicts itself? Do you think that's a conflicting ideology within the community?
Well, that's certainly true for some. Certainly, if you look at the communities and where they stand, it is very intriguing that it's the anti-abortion lobby today tends to be, in the States, the pro-gun lobby at the same point. And those two positions seem so radically, I mean, crazily contradictory to most of us. But of course, it's an intriguing thing that the Americans can read selectively the rights of the individual to bear arms, and yet consider that the rights of the mother should be restricted. And I think they would see that around protection of the rights of the unborn child. But I think probably as much as anything else, it is that on the right to bear arms, there's patriotism comes into the issue, as well as religion. And so it becomes messed up with that. In terms of activity for the unborn child, to be fair, some of the lobbyists and campaigners against abortion who make such misery outside abortion clinics have been very active in strong use of adoption agencies. By and large, they've been banned from offering adoption services because they're held to be compromised in their approach to it. So it's been a hotly contested issue in some of the American Catholic dioceses that their adoption agencies have been banned, although that tends to be around the way that they won't support, as they were required to support under President Obama, fertility advice and abortion advice for mothers. So you see, it's not as simple that they're morally completely at odds with one another. But there is a bit of that, I agree. There's a paradox.
Yes, there is a bit of a paradox. I think that's all I had on my end. Did you have anything else you'd like to add?
What I think we need to consider is, firstly, does this endanger, in fact, Joe Biden's precarious situation in terms of the control of Congress? It seems to me to be unthinkable that Congress, so the USA as a whole, can come out with a clear position on this. The Senate would have one view. And I suspect that in Congress itself, that the representatives would be deeply divided and not just on party lines. And so what will in the end happen is the states will break up increasingly into different positions by different states. So the southern states, it's interesting, it goes right back to the boundaries back of the Civil War in some ways, will largely adopt strongly anti-abortion lines, though how absolutely they'll do that is different. There's already been draft legislation around which suggests that it's going to, some of it very draconian. Others maybe will allow abortion up to a certain week or on grounds of rape or on grounds of danger to the mother's life. It's quite likely that the northern states, the more liberal states in the west and in the east, will come up with a much more permissive legislation. Whether and how far they will go towards abortion on demand, I don't know. You know, in some ways, Anita, I wonder whether doing it by deduction from the Constitution was a mistake in the first place. Because, I mean, isn't it far better that the country comes to an agreement and passes a law on the subject? Because then you can't have nine elderly justices reaching their decision completely independent of public opinion. This isn't a matter independent of public opinion.
Yes, and I mean, I think we can all agree that sort of the makeup of the Supreme Court and how that works is not a super efficient or, I mean, at the end of the day, fair system.
It's a mystery to us, isn't it? Because it's so different from the way in which law is conceived in New Zealand. We don't think that our Supreme Court should have the freedom to radically alter the basis of human rights.
Yeah.
Without some positive act in Parliament.
Yeah, and I think there was quickly one more thing before we have to jump into the news, but sort of the idea when you kind of look at the religious dimension to a case such as this one, and I think the argument that keeps coming up is if one person is religiously against that, that's fine, it's not for you, but there's nothing that gives that person the right to then inflict their religious beliefs on people who don't hold the same beliefs. And that's sort of what I have been seeing coming up a lot in the past few days.
And it will be very interesting to see whether that's the argument that holds the greatest sway, or whether in fact some absolutist position on human life, even at the expense of endangering the safety of mothers, might become the operative clause. Be very interesting to see.
Well, thank you. I think that's all we had time for, but thank you so much,
that's
Professor.
Brilliant. Very good. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.